listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, broadcasting live from the Cultural District here in Fairfield at our community-supported, all-volunteer, mostly original programming, solar-powered community grassroots radio station. I think I got most of the bases covered there. And this is Writer's Voices. I'm your host, Monica Hadley. And our co-host today had to get out of town in a hurry because of this wild weather coming up. My wonderful mother, Caroline Kilbourn, would have been with us today, but there was a... If you're here in Fairfield and you're listening on Friday, you know there's a storm brewing, and she wanted to get home, get her to Mount Pleasant, get her car in the garage before the heavens let loose here in Fairfield. I hear we're in for some really high winds. But we have a wonderful guest who actually knows something about winds and weather, I believe, although that's not exactly what her book is about, but there are some elements of the elements in Lucia Renee's Unplugging the Patriarchy. Lucia Renee has been a professional actress, a computer science consultant, a teacher of self-discovery, and more recently, a writer. Her exploration of consciousness, which has spanned nearly 40 years, drew her to the practices of Hinduism, Zen, Buddhism, and culminated in a 17-year apprenticeship to an enlightened master of American Buddhism, psychic development, and mysticism. Between 2002 and 2007, using her mystical training, Lucia collaborated with other female mystics to identify the hidden energy structures underlying our economic, social, political systems, deconstructed her personal buy-ins to those structures, and offered herself in service to facilitate the dismantling of the structures themselves and their vice grip on the global collective consciousness. And the result, part of the result of that work, is Lucia's book, Unplugging the Patriarchy, A Mystical Journey into the Heart of a New Age. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Lucia.
Thank you so much, Monica. Mm-hmm. I'm delighted to be here with your listeners in Fairfield, Iowa. Is it not the home of Maharishi International University?
It certainly is.
Yes, and I practiced TM for 11 years, so there's certainly a debt of gratitude there.
Well, it's now the Maharishi University of Management. Mm. So there's been a name change, but, and in fact, have you ever been to Fairfield?
I have not, but I have many friends who have transited in and out.
I think you would really enjoy coming and seeing what has been created here in the heartland. Mm. The university is at the center, but it's not by a long shot the total of what's going on here. We've got a thriving artistic community, musical, theatrical, and a lot of focus on sustainable agriculture and sustainable living. We're one of the our mayor has established this plan to become a sustainable city, and we're at the forefront of the green movement, and there's all kinds of neat things going on here.
Beautiful. Yeah. So this is a tribute to the consciousness there. It's beautiful.
I think you might have something there. So Lucia, tell us a little bit about how you came to write Unplugging the Patriarchy.
Oh, with great resistance. It wasn't my idea to write it at all, actually. I'm a mystic, and so, you know, mystics, shamans, seers have been sidelined in society for a long time, and especially if you're a woman and you're a mystic, you used to get burned at the stake for exposing what you knew. So I was perfectly happy to have done the energetic work that I was assigned to do by spirit and then just move on with my life, but I kept hearing a little voice that said, no, 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 there are people that need to understand the information in this book, because the book exposes the way the entire patriarchal system, the male-dominated system of the past 5,000 years, it exposes the way it works and helps someone, I think, begin to unplug their energies from it. In other words, identifying what their buy-ins are to this old system of duality and moving more into unity consciousness in this beautiful heart-based world that we're moving towards as of 2012. So I wrote reluctantly for 6 years, and part of my resistance was that I really had never written anything. And so I literally had to hire my first content editor as a writing coach.
Mm.
And she forced me to edit the manuscript that I had created from 800 pages down to 400, thankfully. So it was quite a process for me.
And you ended up with even less than 400.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Well, in the end, I didn't write it, you see. I had to write it the first couple of times in order just to try and get my arms around the energetic work that we had done and all of the research, because the book learning is woven through my book, Unplugging the Patriarchy, and I had to find a way of writing it and blending it into a detective story so that the reader wasn't overwhelmed by the book research. And a lot of, you know, wonderful writers have exposed the system and different aspects of it, but I think the difference here is that it's done as a detective story, and it's also done in combination with my psychic and mystical perception. So that adds, of course, a range of perception that isn't possible otherwise. But
well, let's talk about that a little bit more in terms of genre and structure of this book. The back cover of the book says that the genre is fiction / spirituality. That is where it would get, I guess, shelved in a bookstore, in that section. But is it really fiction?
Well, it's a wonderful question, and I purposely decided to publish it as fiction. I debated a lot, because the whole objective of writing the book was to not only expose the system for both feminine, female and male readers, but the primary objective was to help women to stand in their power, because it's a book about me standing in my power and unplugging my energies from the patriarchy, and about female collaboration, the women that help to sit down and do a systems analysis of how the whole thing works and bring all of their various skills to the table, and then the three of us that continued on to dismantle it. So, I'm sorry, what was the question again?
Is your book fiction?
Yes. So from my perspective, you know, it's completely fact. But everyone views the world, and they have a version of truth based on the lens that they're looking through. So this is my truth. This came from my journals and my personal experience. But it doesn't really matter to me if someone reads the book and they are more comfortable viewing it as fiction and just a page-turning detective story. It's perfectly fine for me. What's important to me is that someone be able to touch with their awareness field all of the various components of this patriarchal system in order to feel the way it vibrates inside of them, and then to be able to begin to work with those energies to move out of this dualistic system into a more unity consciousness.
So did you feel that your message might be acceptable or heard by more people if it was put forward as fiction than as a memoir or a nonfiction book?
I did, and I think that there are waves of readership. You know, we're in a wave right now where the book is going out. About 98% of the people who read the book are fiction, but some wonderful, wonderful men are reading the book, men who have worked on balancing the masculine and feminine within, primarily, and emailing me and saying that the book is very helpful to them as well. So right now it's more of a spiritual-based readership, but I think because the world is changing and the earth herself is speeding up in vibration, you know, everything is going much faster and much more efficiently in terms of evolution than it ever has, and that will continue to increase as we move forward in the next 3 years. So I think that there are people who are, oh, you could sort of say, triggered to wake up in different waves and stages. And so as that happens, the book will hopefully become accessible to more and more people.
Well, one thing I find interesting is, you know, that you took a story that essentially was true to you and created a fictional product from it. We had a guest last fall. I don't know if you know Hope Adelman.
No.
She's a very well-known nonfiction writer who started writing this story. She had an experience in Belize with her daughter. Her young daughter was basically possessed and or had this imaginary, she wasn't possessed, she had an imaginary friend who was really doing some not very good things, and they ended up taking her to Belize, and she was cured by this Mayan shaman, which was completely outside of Hope's paradigm previously. And so she started to write about it as fiction because it was so unbelievable to her what had happened. And her writer's group, kept saying, well, this isn't, this just isn't believable. And then at one point, they realized that she was writing what actually had happened. And she converted and started writing it as memoir, and then it became believable to them. So it was an interesting, it's sort of the reverse of what your experience has been.
Yes, I think that people pick up the book, and most of the people who end up emailing me, women from all over the world, and, they say, well, it resonates. It resonates. It's true. We're all born psychic. Whether or not we retain those skills is another matter, or whether or not we make an effort to remember those skills. But we all are very intuitional, and so I think the base of my readership at this point, the book is resonating, is true. But again, it's really neither here nor there to me. The book was fictionalized. It's perfectly valid to say it's a fictionalized memoir, because when you're writing, you can't take the reader down all of the wrong turns that the characters went down. And sometimes we did. Sometimes we didn't know precisely what we were doing in our collaboration, or we would begin to work on something and not understand precisely how it fit into the big picture. Sometimes the analysis, for example, took 2 months to complete and was done via mostly email. But I massaged that into 3, meetings where everyone was present. So it is fictionalized in a way.
Right, right. Well, how did you decide on the title, Unplugging the Patriarchy?
I think if I had known how many people cringe when they hear patriarchy, I might have named it something different. But to me, patriarchy, as I said, just means the 5,000-year male-dominated society in which we live. And in the book, I reconcile all of my issues around the masculine and feminine. So it's certainly not derogatory in terms of the masculine energies. But unplugging, there's a section of the book where we actually unplug a certain energy in London. It's sort of we get to the end of looking at all of the various components of the patriarchal system, of which there are 20, and there are 9 that are particularly problematic, what we call the components of the New World Order. But then there was this big overriding structure that we knew when we unplugged it, we would totally be unplugging ourselves from this system, and we would be women who had unplugged from a male-based system but had to continue to function within it, and it was terrifying to us. And the term that kept coming up was that we were about to unplug that structure and unplug ourselves. So it seemed a fitting title, and I really liked the alliteration of the 2 P's.
Right. Now, how did unplugging yourself from this, the way the world works right now, how did that affect your life?
Oh my God, it's totally, I feel totally, totally different. I mean, there's literally nothing at this point in the patriarchal system that triggers me anymore. And by trigger, I simply mean creates a reaction, pushes my button. So we know from, just reading the news every day, sometimes we read about the war in Iraq and we have a reaction about preemptive war or killing innocent citizens or the soldiers. We feel badly that they're coming back and having a problem reintegrating, or we read about the environment and its desecration. And so at this stage, while I'm not implying that my heart doesn't go out to these situations to have to have balanced out the being and brought polarities to rest within you doesn't mean that the emotional body is no longer active. And it certainly doesn't mean that the heart has closed down in any way. In fact, the heart is completely open. And what's happened for me is that the suffering of the planet has simply moved inside. It's been embodied as just one aspect of what is going on in the world today. So, you know, we live in the Kali Yuga, the age of greatest darkness, and we've all chosen to be here on the planet, something that we choose to forget from time to time because we see ourselves as being victimized by this. But we've all chosen to be here, and it's a very challenging time, a time of enormous personal growth if we choose to use it like that. So by bringing everything to rest that was triggering me, I have come into a place of tremendous peace.
Wow. Now, Lucia, you've mentioned several times in the earlier in the conversation and also in the book, the year 2012 comes up a lot. What is the significance of 2012?
Well, you know, it's the date that everybody's very focused on, and some people think the world is going to end. I think that's ridiculous. The world is not ending. It's just the cycle of time that's ending. So we had the old Atlantean cycle, and Atlantis fell, and now we're in this cycle, and it's been a very, very long time. We had a matrilinear age of some 6,000 years ago, and now this patriarchal age, and everything is winding down. All of the energies of this cycle are winding down, and we find ourselves in this really interesting time, this period for the next 2.5 or 3 years, where we are experiencing both. We are experiencing a patriarchal system that is coming unraveled, and we already are able to take up residence in this new heart-based era if we want to, if we're sufficiently unplugged, if we can stand in our integrity and remain keep the heart, if the heart remains open. So it's an interesting crossover where these energies are present. And all that I think is going to happen in 2012 is that the energies of the new era are going to lock into place. Mm. So that leaves us actually in a very interesting position because we have the ability not just to move from the end of a cycle, point A, to the beginning of a cycle, point B. We have the ability to spiral the energies up in consciousness as far as we want before the energies lock down and create that new foundation on which to build.
So the next few years then are very important.
They're very important. I don't really think that, you know, we tend to take things very personally, but really it's Mother Divine at this point, the divine feminine energy that is so very present on the planet, which makes sense because if you live in a male-dominated society and it needs to balance itself out, then what is required is the presence of the divine feminine. And so I'm sorry, I lost the point. What were we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the next few years, and you were talking about spiraling the energies up before they get locked into place, and that
so we can just spiral them up as high as we want in consciousness, and it's really the work of Mother Divine in concert with Mother Earth. Mother Earth is the one who's cycling up in terms of consciousness, and we just happen to be present on her. And we can take advantage of that spiraling up. We can take advantage of the fact that our backs are up against the wall in terms of being asked to change, that change is being demanded. But we can also help to facilitate, I feel, this circuitry that's forming between the divine feminine and Mother Earth, especially women. Women know, they intrinsically know within their bodies how to do that, how to hold power in their lower chakras. And so I think women at this point are being called to the front lines in order to help facilitate this evolution of Mother Earth and the grounding of the divine feminine energy.
You're listening to Writer's Voices. I'm Monica Hadley, and my guest today is Lucia Renee, author of Unplugging the Patriarchy, a mystical journey into the heart of a new age. So, Lucia, when you now I lost my train of thought.
Thank God. Isn't menopause wonderful?
Yeah. I know, I called my mom last night and said, you know, I think I'm losing my memory. She said, well, I lost mine a long time ago, so.
I just, before I began on the call, I had a very profound meditation, just the transits that I'm starting to go through now, and my mind is so diffuse. I've just asked for help, you know, to keep my mind focused, so I'll try to do better.
Well, let's talk about... you know, we've talked a little bit about what the book's saying. Oh, I remember 2012. I just wanted to mention that when I was, you know, there's a lot of talk about 2012 because of the end of the Mayan calendar, you know, and that there's a lot of fear that comes along with that. And last fall, I was in Cancun, which is where the Mayan civilization was, and I met a Mayan, you know, person who descended or you know, from that ethnicity, and I asked him what the Mayans believed about the end, about 2012 and the end of the calendar, if that was to be the end of the world, and he said basically the same thing that you said, which is no, it's just a change, and they think not just a change but a great improvement.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you really can't see beyond. If you're psychic and you're used to working with your third eye chakra or energy center in the center of the forehead, you know, we used to be able to project energy out into the future and see what was going to happen. And for me now, everything is in such a state of turmoil in the collective consciousness. You can't really do that anymore. All you can see is this moment in time and what is appropriate for me. At least that's my personal experience. Mm-hmm. But on the days or the solstices or the equinoxes, the times that you can see forward, you can't see past 2012 because it's the end of this cycle and we have no way of visioning that. And also, I think it's a blessing because if we could see a future, we would dream that future. We would create a world based on our vision. And I think we're not being given a vision on purpose because that means, again, we can spiral things up and literally create something extraordinarily beautiful for future generations.
So we don't have to be limited by our dreams.
Exactly.
Now, as we're coming to this, though, it does invoke a lot of fear. Any change tends to invoke fear in people, and it seems like there's so much pushback and so much so much fear that's being expressed. How do you deal with that?
Yes, I agree. There's a tremendous amount of fear in the collective, and it's mostly because people don't know what's going on, or people are not conscious enough to understand perhaps the conversation that we're having. But, you know, this transition will happen with or without us. And it can play out in one of two ways. It can play out in terms of consciousness, 100%. Of course, we know it's not doing that yet. Or it can play out in the physical, 100%. And it's not doing that either. It's playing out somewhere in the middle. Because all of the people on the planet who are willing to do this deep work of meditation or processing or you know whatever it is that we're involved in, we help to facilitate the transition in consciousness. But I think that there are many people who are going to be feeling a lot of fear. And in my estimation, it's a good thing. Because when your back is up against the wall, you are forced to change in terms of consciousness. And so we've reached a point at the end of a cycle or at the late in the Kali Yuga when the forces are really coming to a head and things are building into a crescendo. And it's only when our life hits rock bottom or if when our back is up against the wall that we have the ability, most of us don't choose to make leaps in consciousness. You know, we have to hit rock bottom before that happens. And so it's a beautiful thing that as a society, on the planet, that we literally have our backs up against the wall because people will now change and evolve very quickly. They will have to.
So you don't get discouraged by the bigotry and the oppression and the militarism and that seems to, in some ways, be gaining strength?
No, because, you know, we could bring that to an end anytime we wanted. We have to be very honest with ourselves. At least this is what I learned through my work. I had to be very, very honest about the fact that if I looked outside of myself and I was triggered by violence, that meant that I still held somewhere in my consciousness violent tendencies. They might be subtle. It might just be the way I treat a customer service representative in India on the phone if I get angry or haughty about it, right? So the collective consciousness on the planet is such that we are literally holding the patriarchal system in place. And we can drop it at any point we want. Indeed, we will when the consciousness spirals up as high to a certain degree, higher. And this is why the work of women is so important. You know, on my website, which is unplugfromthepatriarchy.com, I speak a lot about women standing in their power. And when enough women are willing to do this, it will literally create a vibratory force on the planet that will basically resonate, if you translated it into words, as enough is enough. And when the patriarchy hears the vibration of enough is enough, they will literally lay down their swords, and all of this self-serving, profit-before-people type energy that animates all of our patriarchal structures will grind to a halt, which doesn't mean that the banking system has to fail or that businesses will go out of business. There's nothing wrong with the structures, only with the energy that's animating them.
Oh. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the structures. You mentioned, I think, 20 structures that you identified. Or was that, maybe I had that number wrong, but...
No, there are 20 in total, and there are 9 that are particularly problematic. And in the book, you know, I go through them, and I think those are the ones primarily that people focus on. And I have to tell you that the book is really not a book, because when a mystic writes a book, and again, I didn't write it, it was my teacher who was a mystic, and my lineage, who is a lineage of enlightenment and a lineage of warriors, they really came through me to write the book. And on the winter solstice when I released it, they came through and I facilitated a piece of, all I can call it is Atlantean magic, that was able at this point, because the energy of the planet has increased, to be held. And the book literally became something other than a book. And when someone opens the book, it just raises up into a hologram of consciousness. And so I'm getting emails from people all over the world who are saying, I went through an incredible transformation when I read this book, and I could feel all of these different places in my consciousness, and I could begin to work with them. I could identify them and see them clearly and see the shadow. So I'm extremely gratified that this is happening, because, of course, this was the objective of writing it in the first place.
Now, I found it fascinating that when you first determined that you wanted to identify kind of the structure of the world order and the political economic structure, that you relied on, or you used information from another book that we've all heard about. Do you want to talk about that?
Which other book is this?
J.R. Tolkien's.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I just embarked upon this research, and I was incredibly ignorant about the way the world worked. I mean, I think most of us are. Who has time to sit down and research for 6 months, which is what I did, nonstop? So I embarked upon this journey of researching, and of course then would go to the places and steep myself in their energy, and as a mystic I would look underneath the covers, so to speak, to see what was really going on there. But I would be given clues along the way, and I was always very guided, and one of the clues I received was to use Tolkien and the Tolkien's trilogy as a guide. And I took that to mean his statement about the rings. You know, he says there are, what is it, 7 rings for the dwarf lords, and 9 for mortal men, and 3 for the elves, and 1 ring to rule them all. Well, those are the 20 rings. And my teacher at that moment, when he gave me the clue, said, you see, Tolkien was not so far off in his thinking. So we really used it as a guide, and it was very helpful.
It was also very helpful as a reader to have that structure to kind of all this information, because there's a lot of information. You know, it's kind of hard to describe your book to somebody who hasn't read it, because you do get caught up in the plot, in a sense, in what you're doing and your actions, or the main character's actions. But there's also an incredible amount of kind of just information that is woven into this, and pinning it on those 20 ring structure gave it a really nice feel. Mm-hmm. And made it easier to identify with. But then you also identify some of the rings with the chakras, and some with certain geological aspects of the earth, of Mother Earth.
Yes, that's right.
So you're weaving things, you know, you're weaving all these different elements into a whole, and looking at them from different perspectives.
Yes, and all of my teachers, I give a summary of the body of his teachings. My teacher was Rama for 17 years, who was enlightened and who was a mystic. And all of that is woven in. So in some regards, it's a spiritual handbook or a mystical handbook.
Now, throughout the book, you never refer to him by name. You always say,
right,
my teacher. Why did you choose that, to do it that way?
I'm not sure. I do dedicate the book to him. Everything I do is for Rama. He's helped me through multiple incarnations, and but he is, you know, it's very clear on my website, if you want to know more about him and his teachings, I point you to the foundation. He's left the body in 98, but his teachings are readily available, and I'm very proud to align myself with him.
Great. Well, Lucia, would you like to read a section from Unplugging the Patriarchy?
Oh, I would love to do that.
Great. What would you like to read first?
Well, I'm going to read, I can either read to you just the beginning where I receive my assignment. Perhaps that would be best. And I have to preface it because at this point in my life, at the very beginning of the book, this is the summer solstice of 2002, my life has completely fallen apart. I've hit rock bottom. My father has passed away, so all of my family's gone, and there's no longer any familial support. And I come back from his funeral, and I'm immediately fired.
Oh, my.
I'm completely at a loss for what to do with my life, but I've always sensed that my dharma had something to do with helping to rebalance the masculine and feminine energies on the planet. So at the beginning of the book, I go to a place, it's really a place of Atlantean magic in New Mexico, and I ask, you know, what would you have me do, basically? Mm-hmm. I ask Spirit to direct my life or give me my dharma, and Spirit is silent. I have no answer. So this section is called My Assignment. The solstice occurred at 6:24 the following morning. At around 8, I sat to meditate. I didn't feel much like meditating. I had gone numb after the trip to the caldera. It was easier to feel numb than to deal with Spirit's apparent rejection. Underneath the numbness, however, I was seething. I had no job, no income, no family, and, not from lack of effort on my part, no spiritual guidance from the divine realms. My life had been shattered into pieces that were now blowing in the winds of the summer solstice. But I always meditated. I had meditated every morning for more than 30 years. Closing my eyes, I settled myself in my chair and, after a few moments, managed to still my mind. Immediately, I began to hear words being spoken telepathically, the sound of many voices speaking in unison, each word articulated slowly and clearly. My anger evaporated, and I held perfectly still. For the next 6 months, I was told, between the summer solstice and the winter solstice, research what is happening in the world. Read about politics, economics, and global affairs. Look behind the scenes to learn what is happening on a mystical level. Figure out the underlying mystical structure. once you have identified the structure, your job will be to disassemble it. You have been trained for many lifetimes to accomplish this. You know how to take things apart. Your body has been wired for the task. I sat frozen, unable to respond. Disassemble the patriarchy? It was an outrageous proposal. No human being could disassemble the entire patriarchy. It was colossal. You are not the only person working on this problem, the voices continued. There are many. Some of them will collaborate with you. Fear rushed through my body. I thought I realized that I asked to be of service, but this is insane. Maybe I was imagining it. I had to be rational. But how can I be imagining it? The instructions are so clearly stated. The presence in the room is undeniable. A minute passed. Despite my best efforts to formulate a response, I could not. The only sound was that of my heart colliding with my breastbone as it tried to function normally. Finally, cautiously, I projected a thought back to the ensemble, the only thing I could think to reply. This is going to take a lot of time, I said. I shouldn't look for a job. I should just do this research. The response was definitive. Yes. Then silence. After a long pause, they spoke again, more softly this time. Don't you see that all of this has been set up for you? Your father has died. You have some money from him. You don't have to work for the time being. Devote all of your energy to this project. It's important. Very important.
Thank you. That was Lucia Renee reading from Unplugging the Patriarchy, A Mystical Journey into the Heart of a New Age. So, Lucia, did it take a lot of courage to put so much of yourself on the written page and send it out there for the whole world to see?
Yes. It took a tremendous amount of courage. In fact, when I first wrote the book, I did it in a very detached way. And I handed it over to my content editor, and she said, you're not even in this story. You have to completely rewrite it in a more personal way. It was my writing coach then, and so she taught me how to speak from that place. And it actually took tremendous energy because, as I'm sure you know, as a writer, you have to put yourself back at that point in time and write from that place. You have to be totally there in terms of your attention and reliving everything that happened. And so because we were dealing in this situation with these brutal energies of the patriarchy, it meant I had to put my attention back there again and again and again. And so it took tremendous strength.
Oh,
I mean, I was
yeah.
completely depleted after I finished it.
Well, at what point during the process did you know that you were going to write a book about it?
It was halfway through the project, and interestingly enough, I had been told to move to Williamsburg, Virginia, where I'm still based. And Williamsburg, Virginia sits on the throat chakra, or energy center of the planet, and the throat chakra resonates with the energy of speaking one's truth. Mm-hmm. So I think there were different reasons that I was told to go to Williamsburg, but one of them was that I was to start writing at that point, and I think that really helped to facilitate my writing.
Now, are all of the characters in the book based on distinct individuals, or are there some composites or some completely fictional characters?
No, they're all absolutely real. Just their names have been changed to protect their privacy.
So when these people read about themselves in your book, what kind of reactions did you get?
Well, different reactions, don't you? Because it's difficult, I think, for someone to read how you have perceived them.
Mm-hmm.
So I know my dear friend Mary McNabb, who is Jackie in the book, she's our world-class seer who worked on the project. I actually hired her to help me with it because I was so concerned that I wanted the vibration of the book to be absolutely clean and impeccable. And so I would often send her sections of the book and say, this is what I've written. Does this resonate? Is absolutely correct? And she would say yes, or she would make she would tweak something here or there. But other people, they read it, and then, of course, they have their own issues. And obviously, I've perceived this through my own lens. So if if Mary McNabb had written the book, or my friend who the other character Alexandria is based on, they would tell a slightly different story, wouldn't they? Because they're perceiving it from a different vantage point. They had different skill sets, so of course they had different experiences.
Right, right. But this didn't cause you any lasting difficulties in your relationships?
I think everybody's very pleased because, you know, the four women who came together to analyze the way the patriarchy worked, we were all deeply concerned about the planet and her peoples, and we all had made a very deep commitment to help in any way we could. So I think any way that the information goes out and begins to help people, you know, it makes their job of their dharma easier as well.
Well, when you decided that you were going to write a book about the project, from that point, did that change, did that influence your actions, do you think, knowing that you were going to be writing about this?
Well, I think it made me far more observant from that point forward. The beauty of it was, you know, that the three women who did the collaboration, who dismantled the patriarchy, we all were incredibly vigilant about keeping journals. Mm-hmm. And actually, most of the project was done via email, although I've taken emails and massaged them into conversations and in-person meetings. So that was a tremendous blessing as a writer, because everything was documented. Mm-hmm. But I know that, I suppose it did affect me a little bit. I know when we got to the end of the project and I realized this is our last meditation, this is the last energetic work that we will do, I asked, I said inwardly at the end of that meditation, I know that this is the last chapter of the book, and what would you have me tell people?
Mm.
And basically what I heard was that to tell people that the experiment in consciousness on the planet Earth has been a success. Now is the time to dance. And I ended up not putting that in the end of the book, and perhaps I should have, but there was just a different ending that came through that I think perhaps it was better.
But I like that too. I mean, the ending does, there is a bit of a twist to the ending, and I don't want to give it away.
Yes, that's right.
But
it spirals. You know, there are four parts to the book, and so in terms of consciousness, the first two sections, the first two parts, are really the bulk of the book learning and the mystical experiences to understand the systems analysis of how the whole thing works. And they snap at the end energetically. But the last two parts of the book spiral up in consciousness. So when the reader reads them, or even now when I read it, I love going back and reading the last page of part three and the last page of part four, because literally your energy spirals up through the crown chakra, and I think that is as my lineage intended it.
Now, Lucia, you have included a lot of background information on politics, economics, religion, history, mysticism. At times, you know, getting this information in maybe slows down the pace of the story, but on the whole, it's very readable. How did you decide how much of this needed to be in here and how much was too much?
Yeah, I think the part that I was the most personally involved with, you know, I said that the book really came through me, and certainly when I got it all down on paper and began the three rewrites, the subsequent rewritings, I just got more and more and more out of the way. So the book, the way it was woven together, was not so much my doing. It's the doing of consciousness, because I don't think I could have done that. I'm not that skilled as a writer. But the research portions were challenging, because I had to find a way to not overwhelm the reader, not have them feel, as you suggest, that they were in a classroom. And so I just tried to write them in a personal way, in a very interesting way, to bring in a lot of personal elements, to always give my reaction, what I was going through. And it's necessary. You know, we need to understand how politics, how the military, how the World Bank, how the World Trade Organization function in the world. So I think the book learning to include it is absolutely necessary. The story wouldn't make sense without it. But hopefully it's done in such a way that that it, as you say, it doesn't slow the pace down too much.
Right. Well, I think because you're sort of introducing this information at the time you're learning it, and as you're learning it, so that we're learning it along with you, or being exposed to this information along with you, rather than, you know, rather than doing it as a teacher telling, here's the way it is. It's more like we're engaging in your voyage of discovery.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes it more palatable, because the 30 books that I assembled, that I read when I was doing my research, they all come from that very pedantic place of, all right, I figured this out, this is the way it works. So it couldn't be done in that way, because right. There are lots of books out there, and they're not readily read by the general public. And so it had to be in a different format.
Now, do you have a particular routine that you used, a writing routine, to get this project done?
Well, once the project was over, I embarked on another project, Energetic Work, and that was disassembling female conditioning. There were 12 mm-hmm. archetypes that we identified that were passed down from the matrilinear age that were then polarized and bastardized during the patriarchy. So I was continuously doing energetic work. And I wouldn't write continuously. I would take, 3 or 4 weeks off and go to, Egypt or whatever was going on with that project. But once I really got down to finalizing it, my last rewrite, I actually had to get out of the United States and go up to Canada. I was working with the aspect of the story that is the divine feminine. That thread needed to be pulled to the forefront. And Canada, the energy is much clearer. And I went and rented a house on Vancouver Island that was all glass that looked out over mm-hmm. the ocean. And I pulled on that water element to finish writing the book. I just really cloistered myself away. Mm. And at that point, I was writing nonstop, probably 6 days a week. And I would generally just write until my mind was so fried I couldn't think straight. And then I'd have to just go for a walk in the rainforest. So that ended up being 6 or 7 hours a day, usually with a break in the middle for lunch and a little exercise.
And when were you in Vancouver?
Let's see, that was the winter. The winter of, not this past winter, but the winter of 2008, I finished it.
Wow. I made a trip to Vancouver in the summer of 2008, so I was just wondering if we were there at the same time, but probably not.
And I actually have the book. I found a printer, a wonderful printer. They had such a fine reputation, and they were in Canada. And I actually made a decision on an energetic level to send the book out of the United States, have it printed in Canada, because it removed any remaining aura of anybody who had worked on the book, the cover designer or the editors and so on, so that when the book gets shipped back into the United States, it's just squeaky clean energetically.
So does that mean that you self-published?
Yes.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to do it that way and what that experience has been like for you?
Yes. It's been a lot of work, actually, more work than I would have liked. To run the business end of it, because it means that I don't get to concentrate as much on blogging and writing my next book. But I felt it was very important because it's a book about energy, and it was so important to me that the book be energetically clean, because only then can someone pick it up and really feel what's in the book without any other interference. And so I didn't want to run it through somebody else's company. I didn't know, I wanted to be completely in charge of the artwork and the way it was laid out and the vibration of the book. And I also, to be honest, was a little bit fearful that someone would pull the book, because I think as time goes on and it's more widely read, it will become somewhat controversial. I mean, it does expose the way the entire system works. So a publisher has the right to pull a book. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it, because they own the rights at that point.
Right, right. So now, did you use the print-on-demand technology that's come up, or did you go the traditional way of printing 5,000 or however many copies up front?
We do both. The books that are printed in Canada are... that's a printer, so we do order 5,000 copies or so. But, you know, Borders and Barnes & Noble, they won't work with the little publishers, and so you have to have print-on-demand in place to accommodate them.
Oh, great. I hadn't really thought about doing both. I always thought of it as an either-or situation, but that's...
Doing print-on-demand.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, the technology is wonderful because it's just one book printed at a time and shipped out.
Right, right. And how have you gone about promoting the book?
Oh, interesting question. I'm happy you asked that because I really have not gone with a traditional marketing route at all. I have felt very strongly. Marketing, I don't think, works anymore. Marketing is about, stopping someone and saying, I have something that I think would be useful to you. And honestly, with consumerism, the conditioning we have in consumerism, I think people are terribly tired of that and really ignore it. And so the way I have introduced the book into the world and the way I continue to move it out into the world is to follow the flow of divine feminine energy. I literally just sit and watch in meditation where the energy of the book is going, and I follow and support that. And so the book ends up, and I knew this, I was given a vision that this book would be marketed by women, and indeed it is. So it's just been a matter of kind of plowing fertile ground and planting seeds and moving the book out little by little, and now it's really taking off. And so what we're finding is that one woman orders the book and reads it, and she immediately comes back and orders 3 or 5 or 6 copies to distribute to all of her friends. And so the book is being marketed to women, by women, because the book was written by a woman for women. And it's beautiful. I mean, I looked at our map on our Google Analytics, if you know what that is. You know, when you have a website, you can see who's getting on your website.
Right.
And they give you this map, and the whole map at this point is lit up. We couldn't get any books into South America, but suddenly we have almost, people getting on the website from almost every country in South America and all over the world. So it's very exciting to me.
Well, Lucia, before we run out of time, would you like to read another section from the book? We only have about 5 minutes left.
Sure. Oh,
okay,
yes.
Great.
That's wonderful, because there's a beautiful section that I'd like to read. It's, I guess the only preface that's necessary on this section is that my teacher, who I mentioned left the body in 98, I speak with him inwardly, and he really guides me in a very personal way throughout the project. So I've gone to Scotland in this section of the book. I'm on the Isle of Mull. It says, I drove to the western coast of Scotland and took a ferry to the Isle of Mull. Oh, hang on, that's starting a little bit too early. The day that after I arrived, I drove at sunset to Calgary Beach on the island's northwest coast. I parked my car, walked on the white sand beach, still bubbling from the receding tide, and amused myself with picking up shells. It was too early for sunbathers. I had the beach to myself. After half an hour, I stopped. My inner being was perfectly still. There were no thoughts in my mind. As I basked in the experience, I suddenly felt my teacher's presence. I have drawn you here to show you this, he told me telepathically. This, he paused for me to assess my surroundings, this is who you are. The energy was tremendously clear, the air vibrant with otherworldly light, the waves lapping the sand, the sunlight glistening on the deep turquoise water. Everything was in harmony. Nothing was lacking. Nothing needed to be added. Everything rested in divine presence, including me. My mind was still. My heart was open. I was completely at peace. Yet it was more than peace. I was one with everything around me. There was no difference between my own awareness and my surroundings. I was the beach in all of its perfection. In your day-to-day life, he resumed, your mind is filled with thoughts. Emotions course through your body. But these thoughts and emotions are not who you are. You are this, the perfection of existence, spirit itself. You forget because you live in the Kali Yuga, a time of violence and destruction. You forget because there are billions of people on the planet. Everyone is psychic. Everyone is awash with the thoughts and emotions of 6 billion people. All of that has nothing to do with you. This is who you are. Trust yourself. Trust this. I scanned the ocean and the beach, my eyes finally coming to rest on the woodlands in the distance. A feeling of sadness washed through me. I miss the earth, I confessed to my teacher on the inner plains. Not so many years ago, when the energy of the world was less convoluted, you could take a walk in nature and feel the earth, but now it's almost impossible. Moments like this are so rare. I sat down on the sand, crossed my legs, and drank in the beauty. You have lived many lives on this planet, he said, and you have come to love her deeply. My awareness expanded and gradually descended into the earth itself. Her body was my body. Her oceans were my oceans. I could feel her trees rooted in my flesh. I merged with the spirit of Mother Earth, feeling all of her strength, her depth, her vast presence. I ask you for your power, I said spontaneously to the earth. I ask for all of the qualities your magnificent female form holds. I must take apart the patriarchy, and I beseech your help. Please, for the sake of the human race, help me with this task. The beach was perfectly still, save for the salty breeze that caressed my face and the solitary cry of a gull overhead. In order to do this task, I said, now directing my telepathic thought toward my teacher, I'm going to need the power of the earth. Is that right? That's right, he answered. It's good that you've asked. Mm-hmm. Ask and you shall receive.
Thank you so much. That was Lucia Renee reading from Unplugging the Patriarchy, which you can order from your local independent bookstores or online, and you can check out unpluggingthepatriarchy.com. Do I have that correct, Lucia?
Fine. Okay. And we're running a special on the book for only $11, basically half price, free
wonderful.
Shipping in the U.S. So I think we're trying to do that through the end of the week.
Great. And unfortunately, we are now out of time. If you're listening on Friday, stay tuned for Planet Earthwild with James Moore, and he'll take us on a wonderful musical and informational journey. And if you're listening Monday morning, please stay tuned for The Best of Broadway. And once again, Lucia, thank you so much for being with us here on Writers' Voices today.
Oh, it's been a delight. Thank you for having me.
And let us know if you... if you do another book, we'd love to have you back.
Oh, fabulous.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.